Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9, coming to you from the beautiful city of Sandusky, Ohio. I said beautiful.
Maybe not today.
Okay, not
normally,
today. Yeah, normally yes. Beautiful. We're here at CodeMash 2017. I love CodeMash. I try to come here every year. I'm here with the wonderful Corey House. Tell us how you're doing, my friend.
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Tell us what you do, my friend.
I write way too much JavaScript these days.
Can I tell you something? And I sorry to interrupt. I started trying to do like real client-side dev with like Angular or Vue, or, and I found there was mild consternation on my part because I did not know like I come from .NET.
Yeah.
I did not know how to move over to this new stuff, and I was hoping you could help us out with that.
I think so, and I suspect consternation may not have been the best word to
There was other words.
But you censor yourself
words.
Well.
I lost some hairs here, you can see. Okay.
This is the problem.
How do I even, like, I feel like I keep pulling straws everywhere, and it's like, it's pulling out this huge thing that I need to learn, and then I need to learn this other thing. Help us out, man.
Yeah, so I dealt with that exact same thing like everybody. And effectively, the way that I solved this problem was by saying, let me just sit down at a whiteboard and just start writing down all the things that I have to think about. I have to choose a testing framework. I have to choose transpiling, linting, bundling, a package manager. And as I started going through that list, I realized that that list is absurdly long.
Yeah, I
ended up literally with a list of 40 different decisions that I make to say hello world on a new application. Mm-hmm. And that freaked me out because what I realized was there are a lot of things that we do as software developers that effectively we're making those same decisions that someone else has probably already thought through and done already. So
right.
Can we win from having a clear path? So that's what I think we can share here is just going, here's my opinions for what they're worth.
Okay.
And obviously I won't have the time to get into all the details, but I think effectively, so if what we want to do we want to just walk through the code?
Let's
and
do it.
Start slinging some
Let
code?
Me hit record okay. here because I think we lost your signal for a second.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm going to hit I've got this great little app called Caffeine, which tells my Mac, hey, now you're caffeinated. Now you won't fall asleep.
Oh, nice.
It's a good little... It's kitschy, isn't it?
That's a good little tip.
There's your tip.
All right.
Yeah. So to get started, I already have Node installed. I'm sitting here in VS Code.
And so we're in VS Code. Okay, sorry. Yeah, you said
yes, and I'm a big fan of VS Code. And in fact, I recently switched. I have a WebStorm license, but VS Code has gotten so good, I'm hanging out here. And that's not a sales pitch. It's just I really do enjoy it that much. The VS Code team, you're doing an awesome job. I really do
Eric Gama is in charge, the Gang of Four guy.
Seriously?
Yes, he is. He works for Microsoft. He works on it. He explained, this is an Electron app, by the way, if you didn't know.
I did know that,
and
yes.
And it's amazing. It's
and really in cool. fact, that's one of my favorite things about it is, so I'm hitting Control minus Control plus. Since it's Electron, it's just like a website.
Yeah.
So when I demo for people, it is so easy because everything scales.
Cool.
That it's sweet. So to get us rolling, I'm just going to say npm init. I'm going to go down here into the terminal because I have Node installed, and this is going to fire up and ask me some questions just to fill out a package manager. I'm just going to choose all the defaults here. I'm not going to change anything, but what we can see is the minute that I do that, we get a package.json. And so this is the manifest. If you've ever used NuGet, it's the same sort of idea. We need some kind of metadata about the package. Mm-hmm. With Node, this is what you get.
So let me see if I understand. When you're doing a project with sort of a client-side dev, you're literally making a folder and you're just putting stuff in there, and npm init lets you sort of get that going.
Yeah, and this is one paradigm that will feel strange to C# devs is there's no idea of a solution folder. There's nothing that binds all this together except it's a folder. So when you open it in your project, this package.json sits at the root of the project and describes it.
Got it.
So pretty easy so far. And then the next step becomes, hey, I have a number of different packages that I'd like to install. And this is where I think it's interesting because what I just did was jumped over there and I copied a command. So we're going to let this command run for a second. Now, what you're seeing here is I'm installing a number of different packages. When I say a number, I mean 12. So this is, I'm going to just slow the terminal down here for a second, or I should say minimize it down. So you can see the packages that I installed. You can see I've got Babel. Babel is a transpiler. It's mm-hmm. me taking code that is modern JavaScript. People often say ES6, although ES7 is now out.
Mm-hmm.
Every year in June, we're going to get a new version. So what Babel's doing is taking that new code that doesn't run in all the browsers and transpiling it down into a common ES5 that runs everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what these first three are effectively doing. And then I have ESLint that I've installed and a loader that helps it interact with Webpack, which we'll talk about in a moment. I have Express for a web server. I have Jest for automated testing. I have this little extra script here that just lets me run multiple scripts at the same time. This package called Open, which lets me open something in the browser.
Okay.
And then Webpack down here, which you might have heard of.
Yes.
I'm sure you went down that road. Webpack's getting a lot of attention, and I'm excited about it because they've finally gotten what I feel like is enough inertia that they're going to be the future. I feel like...
And the guy that writes, he's a super good guy.
Absolutely.
I literally like had a little tantrum on Twitter, and he's like, Seth, man, I'll explain it to you. I'm like, oh, dude, it's just a tantrum, bro. It's okay. I'll get over it. But Corey, I mean...
So you look at that and you feel like head exploding. And I look at this and I totally relate to that, because if you're not familiar with the technologies I just ran through in a few seconds, then it just sounds like Chinese.
It's totally like, hey, you know, that. Like it's that picture. It's like, here's how you draw an owl, and there's two circles. And then step two is like a drawn owl. And you're like,
is that what I just did?
Did you feel like there's a step or two?
Man, it felt simpler than that. Okay. Yeah. So. And I totally see this. And in fact, if we were to do this from square one and take a full day on it, I would not throw this at you immediately. What I would say is, let's do a little hello world. Let's do nothing but plain old JavaScript, and then say, wouldn't it be nice if we could use some of these modern features? At which point I would pull in Babel, so we'd be one step closer to the end goal.
That sounds like a really awesome like course you could do on maybe... You know, people could like log in and look at. Do you have some?
Wow, we couldn't have planned this better.
You're like wearing this shirt and everything, right? Yeah.
All the coincidences here,
I know,
it's
right?
Uncanny. Yes. So, and that's exactly what I do. I have a 6-hour course on Pluralsight that goes through this. And the funny thing is, you know, you said this feels overwhelming. I spent a lot of time writing an outline, and I said, I think I can get this done in about 2 hours. Ended up being 6 hours, because to really cover the topic and to discuss the whys and discuss all the options, you do have to go that far.
Yeah, and it feels like, and I want to get back to this, and I want to make sure, and I'm a little bit stalling for time to make sure the NPM like pulls everything down.
Sure.
It feels like there's just, it's a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like I remember when I did my first JavaScript, I like did the hover thing, so my image would like turn different color when you hovered over
yes.
it. It was like a function.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like when you're looking at things like Angular or React or now Preact or Vue.js mm-hmm. or all the, it feels like they're like literally modern full frameworks with MVC, with
yes.
other kinds of patterns. You have things called shadow DOMs, which makes you feel like a ninja when you're coding, right?
I mean, it does sound impressive.
There's yes. a tons of stuff. And so what you're saying is, look, Seth, I know this looks overwhelming right now, but just you got to do this the first time. Mm-hmm. And then once you see it working, then you can sort of dive back in. That may be one way of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think the hard part right now in JavaScript is understanding. So what you're seeing here is 12 different packages. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the real fundamental technologies that we're working with are Webpack, Jest, Express, ESLint, and Babel. So that's 5 core technologies, but it takes 12 packages for me to glue them together in a useful way.
This is like you never look in the references section of your project in C#, and there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. You're like,
yeah.
collections.generic, what the heck? You know, it's just like, it's that thing. That's what that is.
It is.
Except
it is.
Now it's a little bit more upfront, and it makes us scared. But just imagine it's like assembly references.
And my take is, I think it's unrealistic to expect an entire team to have this level of detail. At least in our organization, we have a couple of people that are JavaScript specialists.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that I've gotten good at this is saying, I'm going to accept the fact that I'm not going to be even close to the best C# dev okay. on the team, but I'm going to sacrifice a little of my time in C# so I can get a little bit better at JavaScript
Got
and
it.
Help everybody. Because we do have a front end story that's really important. We're working in Web API and really happy
Absolutely.
There, but we need JavaScript. Now, we happen to be working in React, but a lot of the same conversation here happens whether you're in Angular or Vue or
All right.
whatever.
All right,
be.
Let's move forward.
So one thing that I didn't mention when I started here, if I hit the up arrow, I can see the command that I ran. So you'll notice I didn't type npm install. Instead, I said yarn. Now, yarn is completely optional, but yarn is a alternative to npm that came out fairly recently out of Facebook. And this is a little bit confusing because it still uses npm packages behind the scenes.
It's a package manager that you have to get through the other package manager to do package management, right?
Yes, you summarized that well. I think we can move ahead. Nobody was confused by that.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember Facebook came out with yarn and the joke came out, you know. But I mean, you're just saying this is actually a good thing. There's a lot of good options.
There is, and I want to clarify that the only real reason that I'm using Yarn here is I am on Wi-Fi here at a conference, and what Yarn does is cache anything that it can. So it's not even going to make a network request for these things, and that's why you'll notice I was able to do the install in 7.3 seconds.
That I stalled for too long, folks.
Yeah, whereas if I'd done an NPM install, it would have taken a lot more than
of
that,
course,
probably a minute or two.
Right.
So winning that way.
All right.
So what we have right now is the foundations here. We have the libraries that we need to get rolling. And now the question is, okay, can we come in here and configure these tools? The first tool that I'd like to configure is ESLint. And so with ESLint, one way that you can configure it is create a separate file out here called .eslintrc. Just by convention, give it that name, it will find it. But there's another way to configure it that I enjoy, which is just putting it right here in my package.json. And instead of typing this out, I'm just going to jump over here because I have good notes. What I'm really showing is just part of a session that I'm doing here at CodeMash.
Yeah.
So this is a nice dry run for me because I'm speaking right after this. But the it's easier for me to just paste this in and then talk about it. Let me go like this. Okay, so here's the code that I just pasted in, starting on 25 and down here to 40. What I'm saying is ESLint has a built-in configuration. I can just say, hey, use the recommended settings, and now I get a baseline of really good settings to start with.
Uh-huh.
Now, backing up for a second, if you don't know what linting is a lot like StyleCop and C#. It's mm-hmm. this idea of here's how we want to write code, and if you go outside of those lines, then you'll get a message down there in the console.
Right.
You'll find out that you made a mistake on line 42, whatever it may be. I'm telling it that I'm planning to use ES6, which is the almost the latest version of JavaScript. I could change this to 7. And then my source, I'm going to use modules for my JavaScript. I tell it a few of the environments that I'm going to be working with. And then I'm also just showing down here how I can overwrite certain rules. This is totally optional in here because, again, we were just using the recommended settings. So with this, I've configured ESLint. Now, we haven't written any code yet, so we can't actually see this go. I'm going to put that sort of on the shelf for now and go to the next configuration piece. Remember, we said ESLint was one thing. The other thing we have in here is Babel. Now, configuring Babel has gotten really simple, and this is fairly recently. Thanks, man. There we go.
Repair programming here.
That will make a difference.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, and I'm checking my notes just to make sure. There we go. Yes, okay. So we're going to jump in here to Babel.
And Babel is a transpiler that will take ES6 and put it down into regular plain old JavaScript that any browser should understand.
Bingo.
Okay.
Yes.
It's the same thing like TypeScript, right?
Yep.
There's a TypeScript compiler or transpiler as well.
Yeah, and that's a good question. You really do have a decision to make between those two, and it all comes down to are you a big fan of strong types? If you work in C#, you probably are, and you're mm-hmm. probably going to reach for TypeScript. We ended up using Babel because Babel is more popular in the React community.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably partially because there's not a strong crossover between React developers and C# developers. For whatever reason, now this is changing as I'm seeing, but Angular is obviously the most popular choice right
sure.
now for .NET devs. So all I just put in here was I told it that I wanted to use a preset, and the preset that I chose was latest. Now you can give Babel an array of presets, but what you're doing is telling Babel, take my existing code and then transpile it down to something else.
Got it.
And latest just says take the latest version of standardized JavaScript and then transpile it down. So it will understand everything that is run through the standards bodies, the TC39 committee. And that's literally all I had to do to tell Babel how to handle things. So we're in a pretty good spot. We have linting set up, we have Babel set up, and now we're ready to add a Webpack config. So I'm going to come over here and say webpack.config.js.
So is this a thing that's similar to what Gulp and Grunt used to do?
It is in some ways. And in fact, you'll see a lot of people that will move over to Webpack and then no longer use Gulp or Grunt. That's what I'll show you here. I won't be reaching for either because Webpack handles so much that it's just not particularly necessary anymore,
right.
Which is a pretty big win. So I'm going to save some typing again and just grab a Webpack config over here so that I can talk through it. And we'll pop it in here. So we have, this is 23 lines of code. You can see I'm importing Webpack, and then I'm importing Path, which is just a part of Node. It's a way for me to work mm-hmm. with paths. Now, what you're seeing here is just a chunk of JSON. The way the Webpack works is you configure it with some JSON here. You don't call any methods. Effectively, you describe with this one object what you'd like it to do. Now, fundamentally, understanding Webpack involves really two core ideas, this idea of an entry point and this idea of an output. So you tell Webpack, here's the start of my application, and then you also tell it, here's where I'd like you to output things. And once you've done those two things, then you've summarized, you can see right here, you've summarized most of your behavior that you need. Mm-hmm. Now you will notice there's a little bit of oddities in here. This is giving me hot reloading in the browser, which means that every single time I hit save, I will instantly see those changes. I don't have to go hit refresh. And this just, it's a really nice setup that basically with this one line of code is giving me that behavior.
So here's the part that I think people maybe or I get confused about. When it comes to client-side dev, there's the actual stuff that's running in the browser, in the client side, what the client mm-hmm. sees. There's the stuff that's running in the server, mm-hmm. and then there's the stuff that's running during development time.
Yes.
These are three different things.
That's true.
Very distinct things. Now, where would you say Webpack lives?
So Webpack is running only as a build tool. So it is running on my machine. Now the thing that's a little confusing is Webpack comes with its own web server. So
right.
If you work in .NET land, obviously you know IIS. Mm-hmm. Instead, I'm using Webpack for my dev server, although I am combining Webpack with Express. I'm just gluing the two together and effectively using Webpack as some middleware within Express.
So then there's four different things that we're talking about. We're talking about, like, you have the actual client side that the client sees.
Yes.
The server side that the client sees.
Yes.
Then you have the client side that you see as the dev, mm-hmm. and you also have the server side, so client server and client server on the dev side. Mm-hmm. Same thing you would look at if you're building an ASP.NET website.
Yes.
Right? Exactly the same, but now Webpack sort of marries the server side and the client side with Node.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, the way that we work is we have mock APIs that we set up, and I won't have time to go through this here, but I go through the whole thing in my course of saying, let me just define a mock API structure up front. So I have a separate team that's going to be building all our services using web API.
Right.
But they're behind us by about a month and a half. But we've already built the user interface because we just wrote against mocks. So what I did was I used Express and Webpack just to fire up a web server and simulate a RESTful API.
That's going to look exactly like the one?
Yes.
Okay.
As long as we follow the same structure, then life is good.
Which is nice.
To decide up front. It's effectively coding to an interface without an explicit interface.
And what's nice is that you can actually do this in parallel and maybe even finish before the back end, which is okay.
Yes.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
For sure. So we've really talked about these two. You can see on the output, I'm just telling it to output to my source directory. I'm going to create that in a moment. So I'll put all my source code in a source directory. So we can really consider this section taken care of. So let's jump back up here to the top. I'm telling it that when I want to debug my code, I would like it to generate source maps. There's a number of different types of source maps.
What's a source map? Is that like debugging symbols?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. So yeah, source maps. Think about this. We're going to write all this code, and then Babel's going to end up turning it into different code. So when we look in the browser, we want to be able to see our original written code. It makes it a lot easier to debug when I know that line 3 here is still line 3 in the browser. And that's what this setting does. Now, I could turn it off if I wanted to, but I get this for free by just putting the setting in.
Right.
Webpack will generate it for me. And then I'm just telling Webpack that I'm targeting the web here. But remember, you don't have to use Webpack just for web development. You could use it for Node as well. So I could change this to Node, and then it will change the way that it generates the code.
Got it.
Down here, I'm only using one plugin. Plugins are ways to extend Webpack's behavior. And you can see the one thing I'm doing is hot module replacement plugin. So I have to define the plugin here, and then I actually configure the plugin up here on the entry point. I'm effectively telling the application, the entry point is the beginning of my app. You think about index.html. Normally, your index.html would reference index.js or mm-hmm. bundle.js. And that's what precisely what you see here. I'm telling it, inject some hot reloading code, and then do this, and it will just serve my application from memory. So we covered everything but this last little piece. Here's my module loader. So loaders is this idea of teaching Webpack how to handle things. You're telling it, okay, I'm working with JavaScript, so I want you to find any files that end with .js, and then I want you to run Babel on them, and I want you to lint them. And that's why we installed the Babel loader and the ESLint loader over here within package.json.
Awesome.
You can see there's Babel loader, and then there's ESLint loader. So by convention, any of these loaders tend to end with dash loader in their name. Go ahead and save this. And the one thing I'm doing here is just excluding node modules because there's no reason for it to transpile any of that. Mm-hmm. Anybody that publishes a node module has already done their compiling. They're giving you final built code.
Sure.
So just saving some processing time there. So we'll go ahead and save it. Now, if you're not overwhelmed yet, there's hopefully hanging on. There's what you have to take in is, so we have in 23 lines, what we have defined is a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, we have taken all this code, we've set up hot reloading, we're gonna send it over into an output directory, and we've also told Webpack that we wanna generate source maps and run our linting. So we're pretty close to having a complete dev environment set up. Let me check my notes and see what we are missing. Okay, so the other thing we'll need here, we're going to need a web server to host all of this. Now you might be thinking, well, I already have maybe IIS on my machine if I'm working with Visual Studio, couldn't I use that instead? Well, we have that story. But what tends to happen is we will use VS Code and then just use a node-based web server for our front end. And then accept the fact that we'll be hosting our web API calls in IIS or using Visual Studio directly,
right,
however you choose to do it. So you end up with two different web servers and you just make calls between those two. So so what I'll show here is setting up that node side. The way that I get that done, I'm going to create a new file and I'll call it source server.js because that's precisely what it's going to do. It's going to be a server for source. And just to keep things clean, I often like to put this in a folder called build tools because that's really what this is a build tool. And I'm going to, again, save a little code because I can talk through this pretty quickly. It looks like a lot of code, but when I talk through it, you'll realize that conceptually there's really not much going on here. So this is 24 lines of code that configures Express to serve our application. So I'm pulling in Express, I'm pulling in Webpack because, again, I was saying we're going to integrate Webpack and Express together.
Right.
Path, which we already talked about. And here I'm referencing that config file that we were just in. And then I'm going to use open to actually open the browser, just save myself a little bit of work. So what happens, I'm just setting some variables up here, instantiating Express, and then I'm passing in the config that we referenced up here on line 4. These two lines just tell Express that we want to use Webpack's hot reloader. So this is telling Express, anytime that I hit save, I want you to dynamically inject new code into the browser. It's going to use WebSockets behind the scenes to get it done. Really helps us move more quickly. Then I'm going to set up just one simple route. I'm wildcard routing because I'm building a single page application. I want to say, no matter what request that you get, just use an asterisk here, go ahead and load my index.html. Once I've done that, then I can go ahead and start up the application right down here and just log out any errors that happen. Otherwise, go ahead and open it at localhost. So we've configured our server now.
We're in good shape.
And
this is just a way because literally, you can't click the HTML file and it loads the browser and the file system. It's not going to do everything correctly. This is a way to have a server start up, just like you would with IIS Express, and get your stuff to go.
Yes, yes. And the benefit of this is that it integrates with Webpack, too.
Right.
So what we're going to see is how nice it is for me to be able to go ahead and hit save and see my changes. So I think if I am reading correctly here, checking my notes again. Okay, so now what we are ready to do is actually glue all this together, and we'll get that done using NPM scripts. Now, if you're somebody that's used Grunt or Gulp, you've probably automated that way. Those are two ways you can get it done, totally an option here. I prefer just plain NPM scripts because it gets the job done without a lot of work. So right here within package.json, I can define scripts and really make command line calls, call different node modules, just right here in the code. So I'm going to create three here. The first one I'm going to call open. And this will open our application. And to get that done, I'm going to say node tools source server.js. So that will be calling, remember, calling the source server.js that we defined over here. So that will end up opening our browser. Now, by convention in Node, the script that you call to start the application is called start.
Yeah.
So that way I can just say npm start, and by convention I know that it will work. So let's define the start. And here what I'm going to use is use that npm run all package that we installed at the beginning. I'm going to tell it to run a few things in parallel because I want it to do two things. I want it to run open, this script that we just did up here, and I also want it to run my tests. Now we haven't defined this test script yet, so let's go ahead and do that as well. This one comes out supremely easy. because I'm using Jest as my test framework. I'm a big fan of Jest, which I'm guessing you probably have not heard
of.
No,
looks like you have test twice too.
Let's lose that one. That one's not going to do us much favors anymore. Okay, so Jest is a popular framework for React developers. Came out of Facebook, so they were scratching their own itch. They were basically taking Jasmine and enhancing it. But here's what's really cool about Jest. As you can see here, for me to run it, all I tell it is, hey, run Jest, and I want you to watch files. I didn't have to do any configuration.
Right.
I mean, you saw nothing that I've done so far was to configure Jest. It's just there. So when I write my first test, it will just plain work. So we're done now. I have completely wired up a dev environment, and I wasn't watching the clock, but I think we did it in under a half hour.
Yeah, and that was me with me asking.
And with your witty banter. Yeah, I mean, that was impressive.
Really, yeah. Super.
So now we're at a point where we can go ahead and kick the tires and see how this works, see whether I actually did my job well. So let's go ahead and just create a simple app. Again, I like to keep my source code in a folder called source. So let's create an index.html. And then, again, I'm just going to save some time here and just put in a little HTML boilerplate. Nothing particularly interesting here. And we'll be referencing bundle.js. Now, this bundle.js, remember, it doesn't exist over here.
No, it doesn't.
Can't see it anywhere. But we've already told Webpack right here that we want to create source index.js. So, I think I have a typo there because I'm saying bundle here and I'm saying index here. So this needs to say source bundle.js. Those two, I'm sorry. No, I'm losing my mind. This is the output. I'm calling the output bundle.js, and I'm calling the input here index.js. And that's precisely what we'll do. We'll go over here into source. We'll create index.js. So we've got this HTML file. And now for index.js, I'm just going to put a little bit of code in here. This is super simple code. So I'm going to use an arrow function here, mm-hmm. just showing say hi. So we're basically proving that ES6 is being transpiled. And then I've got a little function that adds two numbers here. I'm going to call say hi. So if this works properly, we should see it log to the console. Now I want to clarify again that index.html is calling bundle.js because Webpack config is going to take our index.js that we just created.
As the entry point,
and it's going to spit it out at the output, which is bundle.js. And that is going to be held in memory. You're not going to see any physical file written over here because Webpack just holds it in memory because it's faster.
Yeah.
There's no reason to write the file, so every time it changes, it just changes it in memory.
So just to be clear, index.js is the entry point of the application, but there may be like about.js, there may be tons of other JS files.
Yeah.
And what Webpack is going to do is it's going to bundle and minify and put those together?
Yes, if you'd like to. You could have it generate multiple bundles for different pages if you want. Mm-hmm. And that way you could lazy load them as you move from page to page.
I see.
So lots of ways to get it done. But yes, what you described there is precisely what's going on here. So I think, let's see, we should be able to start the app now. So I'm going to come down here and hit npm start. And when I do, you're going to see it fail because I'm not very good at coding.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what did I do? Cannot find module tools source server. Oh, because I called it build tools instead. So we've got to come over here to
the Webpack,
my Webpack config. It would be, what was my error? In tools source server, cannot find module. So that is called from my Webpack config. Why am I blanking here? It is my...
Like, how does it know to start source server? Where does that...
So it's calling source server...
Oh, I know why. I know why it's not working. Because it says dev here instead of JS.
That'll make a difference. Well, that is one mistake that I made, but I believe I made another one because it's looking for tools here instead of build tools. So let me rename this to tools.
Okay.
There we go. So let's give this another go. Excellent. Okay. So that is really small, but what we can see here is a little high code mesh. I also have a typo in my index.html. because I'm missing an opening angle bracket. Now notice, I'm going to hit save. We'll come back over here. Now for HTML, it won't hot reload, but for any JS changes, it will hot reload those immediately. So I'm going to open up the dev tools here. And if we come over to our source, we can see, okay, there's our index. We can look at bundle.js in here and see our code. But here's what's cool. So I can come over into index.js and I could set a breakpoint and say hi, for instance. I can just say debugger. And here's a friendly tip. If you haven't done this before, this will tell the browser, hey, stop on this point when you hit it. So now you can see I come over to the browser. Notice how it immediately reloaded when I hit save. And we can see my breakpoint here.
Wow.
We can also see that even though we're transpiling the code, this isn't the actual code that's running in the browser. This is our original source code shown in the browser.
Which is
so
what
that
the
I can interact
map does,
with it.
Yeah.
That's what the source map does. Yeah, so we could go see the bundled code. Here's the bundled code. You don't want to try to read this. This is no fun. But we can read the source. So the only thing, so now we have this situation where I can come in here, I can manipulate the code, I can change hello world to put a question mark after that. When I hit save, I immediately see my linting output here. Mm-hmm. So you can see, for instance, I'm telling it, don't leave a breakpoint in. I want to have that warning because I don't want to push to production with debug statements in here, but it is useful during that. But again, if I come back over here now and reload, I should see immediately there's my code has been changed. I can hit F8 and move past it. And even those same linting warnings come through here in the browser as well, which is quite handy. So I tend to just, you know, you have a two monitor setup, you've got your VS Code on one side, got this on the other, and you can really do fast development. So one final thing to show here, we talked about setting up tests, but I didn't write any. So let's just go ahead and quickly write one. Now I like to put my tests right alongside the file under tests. So I have an index.js, but now I'd like to write a test for index.js, so I just call it index.spec.js. I could call it index.test.js. Either of those conventions, Jest just automatically finds it.
Nice.
Don't have to do any kind of plumbing. I'm a big fan of that. So let's come back over here, and I'm just going to copy my test. And here we are. So this test is going to be very simple. I'm going to pull in the add function from index.js. Remember, this was it. It just takes two numbers. Couldn't be simpler than that. And then I'm going to say I expect adding 1 plus 1 to be 2. So you can see the moment that I hit save, my test ran down here. I can see that I had one test suite, one passed. If I come up here and I break this test and hit save, I see immediately that it failed. So I get this really rapid feedback. If you want to do test-driven development in JavaScript, I mean, what you just saw, this took... We spent a fair amount of time here at the beginning, but the only thing that I did to configure testing in Jest was to come in here and say, Jest watch. I mean that, so although it is really popular in React, I'm a huge fan of Jest for anybody that's writing. If you're working in just about any JavaScript framework, I would suggest giving it a look.
Awesome.
It really is easier to set up than popular alternatives like Mocha or Jasmine, which are also great,
but
been quite happy. So effectively, this is my shtick. What we just saw here, I agree with you, It's really intimidating at first because there are quite a few moving parts, but what we really just saw was 5 moving parts. I mean, Babel, ESLint, Webpack, and then some NPM scripts here to help really glue things together. But if you can get those core pieces in your head, what you realize is what you're writing is a little bit of glue to make all that goodness come together.
And then once you say you're following along and you did this and you're like, okay, it worked, then you can start to look at, well, I want to use TypeScript, so I swap out the Babel for the TypeScript compiler.
Absolutely.
Or I want to use something else, and I just swap out. Or I want to add something, then it's just sort of an NPM, you're adding a package.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's nice here, is that all of these are individual opinions, and usually switching, for instance, from TypeScript to TypeScript from Babel isn't going to ripple through the rest of your system in a big way. It's just, I'm choosing that instead.
So you're saying that the client-side dev is like a giant pool of cold water. You just got to jump in and get wet. The shock will go away.
That's a fine metaphor. Well done.
Nice. Where can people go to find out more about your talk, this that you're doing, and then maybe you can talk about your course if you want to get more in depth. How can you do that?
Yeah, sure thing. So everything that I just went through, I have out on GitHub. And let me just pull it up really quickly so people can see it. This is out under my GitHub, which is github.com/CoreyHouse. And then my repository for it is CodeMash-2017, because I'm here at CodeMash.
Right. If
you've never been to CodeMash, I highly recommend it.
Really? Is your first time? Come on, dude.
I think, year 4 for me. I love CodeMash.
Yeah,
always have a really good time here. So this has links to the related course here, because really what we saw was a very encapsulated version of a 6-hour course where I take the time to explain why I came to the decisions that I did, and also to talk about every single decision I made has 3, 4, 5, 6 other options you can consider, and I talk through why you might want to use those instead. Because that's really the hard part in JavaScript is making the decisions, but what I encourage everybody to do is have a meeting with your team and say, can we as a team come to these opinions and say, well, do we like Babel? Do we like TypeScript? Do we like ESLint or do we like JSHint? And then just one time say, well, let's build an environment that works well for us and we'll just use it going forward.
I love it. So the pool is deep. It's nice. Jump in, get wet, be cold. It'll be great. Corey, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Again, we're here at Codemasters 2017 in Sandusky, Ohio. It's rainy. It's a little ugly outside. But inside, we're learning tons of things. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.